it's certainly been an aerial bombardment, so it's unique in that sense. You know, although there's been some ground warfare in southern Lebanon between Israeli troops and Hezbollah fighters, a lot of the damage and a lot of what we've seen of the war has been this carpet bombing of the suburbs in Beirut.
And you also got to see southern Beirut.
It was like nothing else that I'd ever seen before. And I've been certainly to some war zones. I guess the one that was more closely resembled was that in Kabul in Afghanistan. But you could probably, if you go to the centre of the southern suburbs, you could look out 8 to 10 blocks in any direction, and the buildings had either been totally levelled or totally gutted. You could kind of make out the streets, and they were trying to bulldoze the debris to allow people to get through and to try and look through their possessions, what was left of the building, which in most cases was nothing. So we actually went in there about 2 hours after the ceasefire was declared, so that was about 10 a.m. on the Monday morning, and there were several buildings still on fire. The Israelis had dropped bombs in that final 2 hours of the ceasefire, just before the ceasefire came into effect, so the place was still burning.
So we are not a human being, and they are a human being in USA, so they can compare 11th of September to this destruction, and they can tell us later about democracy and the new Middle East.
Now, a lot of people fled, more often than not those that were able-bodied. What did you find of the people who decided to stay or were too injured or even too infirm to move?
Well, clearly in South Beirut, some of those people have probably perished. I think when you walk around the ruins, you can smell decaying bodies all around. So clearly, over the coming weeks, more bodies are going to be found. And I dare say that some of those are going to be perhaps the old and or the infirm. A lot of cases, people were telling us that they just simply didn't have money for a taxi fare to go two blocks, you know, so they didn't have a dollar to their name. And of course, these car journeys from South Beirut were in many cases, from South Lebanon were in many cases very, very expensive. So if they didn't have anybody to rely on, they were in pretty deep trouble.
Obviously, a lot of the carnage would have been because there wasn't much warning to actually get out. How much does the local population blame that lack of notification that something was happening and the infirm, the sick, the injured, the old, for them to get out?
Well, look, the most important thing is just simply because you drop a leaflet or a warning saying this place will be bombed in the next day or so and you need to get out, it doesn't necessarily mean that the person is in a position to get out. As I said, they don't have money, they may be very old and have no one to rely on, and in those situations it's really difficult for those people to leave the area. They have in many cases nowhere to go to.
I want to ask all Australian people, all Australian fathers, if someone have lost 6 casualties in 1 minute, I just want to ask this question: will he be defeated or will he be tough and will think about revenge? This is a question for the human psychology, not in a Lebanese way, you know, an international human way.
In terms of the warnings, sometimes they were specific. I mean, sometimes they'd say, we will bomb this suburb because we believe that Hezbollah fighters are stationed there. But often that wasn't based on any specific attack that had been launched from there. They just simply felt that it was a Hezbollah stronghold, so they decided to sort of bomb an entire area. In some cases, these areas were mixed districts. They weren't especially Hezbollah districts. They weren't particularly Shiite districts. In fact, in a lot of the places we went to where there was bombing, they were Christian neighbourhoods.
You stumble across a former US congressional aide and law professor in a hospital, also investigating the use of US-supplied weapons. How do you believe he will use this information?
Professor Lam is trying to establish exactly what American weapons have been used in Israel. He knows American weapons have been used. He's looking at it from an international and from an American legal perspective, and that is that weapons that are supplied to Israel or to other countries need to be used according to very strict guidelines. That is, they should never be used against civilian populations. And that is clearly what he's worried about and investigating. And he believes the evidence so far will reflect that that has happened.
Seeing it on the television isn't the same as being here. It's just hard to imagine the extent of the devastation. I'm very curious to know how many weapons it took to do this, how many bombs or missiles or artillery shells. I know they pounded it and pounded it and pounded it.
Does this look like precision bombing to you?
No, it's carpet bombing. It's taking an area, whatever number of blocks it is, and bombing everything in it. The opposite of precision. It's comprehensive, it's gridded, it's planned, it's complete.
I mean, there's already been cluster bombs that have been picked up by children since the ceasefire came into effect, which have caused some terrible injuries. And at the end of it, to present this information to Congress and to try and stop any further supply of US weapons to Israel.